much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, Dr. Zamperon and I are wishing you the best. You are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And today we have as our guest the author of a wonderful book called Your Brain on Plants, and we'll be bringing her on shortly. But I do want to tell you that if you go to naturalnurse.com, go across the top to calendar and click that, you will get a drop-down menu of many of the classes and workshops that we have. In fact, I'd love to say hello to all our listeners who joined us live on ground in New York's Chinatown. This weekend, we had a wonderful Chinatown herb walk, and we do have that several times a year, so you can sign up for the next one. Thank you, listeners who joined us. It was so wonderful to meet many of you in person. Really a pleasure. And coming up, we have a wonderful online class about the thyroid and the adrenals and all the glands and its relationship to health and wellness and herbs that you can use to support that. And that's an online class that has CE units for nurses, midwives, registered dietitians, massage therapists, and anyone can take it, even if you don't need the CE credit. So you can sign up for that by going right to naturalnurse.com calendar. You'll see that one coming up shortly, October 6th. And then we also have the American Herbalist Guild Conference. That's going to be in Bethesda, Washington. And that you can join with us live, or you can sign up to just get the live audio in real time, or of course you can get all kinds of tapes later on. So all kinds of ways to join with us. We teach classes daily by phone and online. For those people who are interested in becoming RH, Registered Herbalists. So we're a mentor with the American Herbalist Guild. Another thing we do is personal consults if people want to use specific natural remedies for their personal health. So we have personal consults available. So basically, we work with people all over the world every single day. And we'd love you to visit naturalnurse.com calendar. Or, of course, you can find our radio archives. We also have radio archives right here at PRN.FM. So we are busy and we'd love to hear from you. And today we are thrilled to have as our guest Dr. Nicolette Perry. Nicolette has a PhD in pharmacognosy from King's College in London and has researched and published on medicinal plants for the brain. Her research into sage for Alzheimer's disease triggered a move to research central nervous system plants at Newcastle University. Her long-term interest, beginning with a degree in biology on health and disease, is in the science behind the use of plants for health, with a particular focus on aromatics for the brain. She is the director of the Dilston Physic Garden, a nonprofit established for education in medicinal plants, where she runs workshops, organizes talks on plants for health, and teaches on the foundation in plant medicine. She is keen to convey the science behind plants, which we'll be doing today, as herbal medicine, particularly for their preventative role and as an adjunct to mainstream medicine. She also enjoys spending time with her British artist husband and two children, walking, reading, and cooking, and working outdoors. And today we're going to be focusing on her book, which she co-authored with her mom, as a matter of fact, and it is called Your Brain on Plants. Improve the way you think and feel with safe and proven medicinal plants and herbs. So welcome to Herbally Yours, Nicolette.
Thank you, Ellen. It's lovely to be here.
I am so happy to have you as a guest, and I want to tell you that, you know, you're coming from across the pond, right, as they say, but this is a perfect and complete connection, and I can hear you perfectly, so that's great.
I'm pleased to hear that.
Now, share with us about your interaction with your mom, because she's your co-author on this book, Dr. Elaine Perry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so Elaine's a professor of neuroscience, and she has been researching the human brain, particularly the brain in terms of disease for Alzheimer's disease and other mental disorders such as autism for, well, you know, all of her career. So, and I joined that bandwagon when I was doing my degree, my first degree, and as a summer project. So, it's been a really exciting road, working with my mother, and an inspiring road. But most of all, I've been so inspired by all the plants I've met on the way and all of the science that's now really backing up what most people know they've been doing for thousands of years.
That's a beautiful point, Dr. Perry, that I would like to sort of investigate a little bit more fully, because I find that's true. After spending over 50 years in the field researching indigenous medicines throughout the world, and you'll get things that might be called old wives' tales or traditional shamanic remedies, and when I look into them, some of them have never been studied. Yet, I have never found one that doesn't work. Not one that doesn't work for what they say it works for. Otherwise, of course, that story would not get passed down. But now, like you're indicating, we are taking plants and having rigorous science to where we can discover if they work and also how they work through the mechanism of action. So I love that progression from traditional knowledge to scientific validation.
Yeah, me too. It's really fascinating that round the world communities have been using, well, you know, we say thousands, but it's probably ever since we got out of the caves, so it's probably like millions of years, we've been using the plants around us for our brain. You know, so all around the world people use plants to calm, to help sleep, to even help improve memory. But it's only now we're catching up with people like Hippocrates, who said food is our medicine. We're catching up now and realizing that actually there's a lot of science behind these plants. I do have issues with our clinical trial methodology and whether that sort of correlates with herbal medicine and how plants work, given individual prescriptions. But I think what they can do for the brain, especially with protective medicines, is crucial.
So I think what you're sharing, and let me know if I'm right, is that when we start to do scientific studies and we isolate one constituent or use a specific dose that might seem to make sense in conventional modern medicine, and then we don't get a positive outcome, but very often that's because they're taking out one isolate or they're using it in a way other than how it has been used traditionally, both in terms of extraction methodologies and dosing. So it's hard to say that we're getting a one-on-one with what we find in the traditional stories.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, as you know, in herbal medicine, and I'm sorry I'm not saying herbal medicine. So
I'm glad you are. I'm glad you are, because you're our precursor. Perhaps we should all go back to that. My co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, he also says herbal, too.
Well, I don't know that herbal's not correct. I looked it up, and I think historically we should be saying herbal, not herbal. Anyway.
Right.
So, I think so. So I think it's really interesting because in herbal medicine, we individually prescribe. So we will prescribe somebody who is suffering from, for example, coming with insomnia and anxiety, something different from somebody else who's suffering from insomnia, because they may have depression with it or something else with it. And we take into account that fact. I'm not a medical herbalist, so when I say we, I'm talking about what I've learned. So that fact is taken into account in herbal medicine, which it doesn't do in clinical trials. So in clinical trials, you're testing something against a placebo, or you're testing it against another drug, you're testing a plant against another drug to see whether it has the effects, but you're treating everybody the same within that group. And I think, you know, in orthodox medicine, we're also seeing that is a crucial shift at the moment, a shift to treating the individual rather than collectively treating a disorder or a condition or a symptom. So I think the natural approach doesn't only talk about using plants, but it's how we use them for treating the individual.
That's a really, really good point. That's really true, because of course everybody's different size, shape, sex, condition, how well they might absorb something via one root versus another. Of course, with plants, there's taste involved, so sometimes a really medicinal bitter component someone just will not be able to take because they can't handle that flavor if it's in a liquid form. So it might do better in a capsule form, but the capsule may not break down effectively. So plants are multifaceted and multimolecular versus pharmaceuticals, which are an isolate. And that makes it more difficult to do standardized studies.
Yeah, I think so. And that is hard in clinical trials. And when you read clinical trials on plants that have been used for the brain for various different conditions, you know, like insomnia, like anxiety, like depression, you want to make sure, well, a lot of them don't publish what the plant contains, and they don't publish a phytochemical profile of it. And as a person who's, you know, quite into the plant chemistry, it's quite hard to establish and compare trials for that reason, because as you say, you know, one plant extract in one part of the world is going to be different from a plant extract extracted in another part of the world. So comparing these clinical trials means that we do have disparities, and we also may have trials that aren't as effective because of, firstly, dose, but maybe because the plant wasn't extracted properly. So there are real key issues that medical herbalists may know, and even when they extract themselves, they may well know. A classic example, which I do like to talk about and what people love hearing about, is foxglove. And I know that's nothing to do with the brain, although, you know, the heart conditions are linked. Having a good solid heart condition is linked to brain disorders. But William Withering, the Scottish physician who discovered the use of foxglove for heart conditions by watching what he called a gypsy or an old crone, or, you know, you could call it a witch. Those are the terms that were used in those days. By watching this lady treat somebody with dropsy, which was the old term for edema, which is part of heart failure. So it was really interesting when you read the historical notes that he says, and how he then established from watching her cure people that were not being cured by other methods, treat them. He then tried to use foxglove. So he then, and I can't remember the exact terms, but he experimented with his patients. You know, those were the clinical trials of his day. So this is, you know, back 300 years ago, 200 years ago. And he then tried using the leaves, using different parts of foxglove. And through trial and error and a variety of clinical trials and individuals, which didn't always go well, he realized that he needed to use the leaves when the plant was flowering. And he needed to use the leaves and not other parts of the plant. And then when he used that, he was getting good, solid results. Because at certain times of the year, as you know, certain chemicals are higher in plants, and flowering is a particular time, just before flowering, when plants produce a lot of their bioactives.
Yes, that's true. So when you collect a plant, does depend on which part of the plant you're looking for as well. And I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And our guest today is Dr. Nicolette Perry, PhD. We are talking about her absolutely exquisite book, Your Brain on Plants. Improve the way you think and feel with safe and proven medicinal plants and herbs. And I'd like to talk about your book a little bit, Dr. Perry, because it's absolutely beautiful. It's, you know, tons of full color. I don't even know how they get these pictures in this book that just pop out. They're just beautiful. Yeah. And in addition, the breakdown of each herb is exactly like what we're talking about. And we'll go into some herbs specifically. We have a full hour on our show today, such as the plant, then the history and folklore, then the science that has been done, the key ingredients, how to take it, and safety for each plant. And then in the back, you actually have notation of the studies that go along with that particular part of the book. So this is a fantastic book, both for individuals who are interested in using plant medicine to improve their brain function and their brain health, and for professional herbalists and botanical pharmacologists, and certainly for doctors who want to incorporate herbal medicine along with perhaps conventional medicine or instead of pharmaceuticals. And this is a very science-based book as well as capturing the traditional essence. So it's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, yeah, no, it is, isn't it? I was really pleased with it. The publisher worked really hard to turn, you know, what is kind of hardcore scientific information into something that's really readable. And the illustrator made these lovely, lovely pictures, which, you know, just, they could make art forms in themselves. But, I agree. It was getting the story of the folklore, and the traditional historical use to modern day use of plant medicines. But then when you put all of the clinical science with it, and when you put the lab science, so the technical data that backs up, you know, exactly how these plants work, and you put the safety and the contraindications, when you put all this together, it really makes one hell of a picture for some of these plants. And although only, you know, maybe four or five plants have really been critiqued by scientific data, you know, by several clinical trials, so by a meta-analysis, for example, when they have, the data is really clear that these plants are effective and they can parallel orthodox drugs, and when they're tested against them, they are as efficacious. And what is key is that their side effects are much lower. They don't have a lot of the side effects like addiction or cognitive effects that some of the sedatives and hypnotics can have. So that whole picture, when you put it together, is what we were trying to do with the book.
Well, it does it beautifully. And I want to talk about one plant. I just decided to open up the book and let's see where it falls and discuss one plant that is beautifully done. And you're talking about rose. And it looks like you're talking a lot about rose oil. But we can talk about a lot of different medicinal uses for the rose. I'll just throw out that I love when you're talking about mindfulness and the whole connection of roses with experiencing calmness and taking the time to smell the roses. That's even a common saying, isn't it? Take time to smell the roses. But you're talking about the fact that cognitive therapy has been shown to relieve depression in premenstrual syndrome in women. This is a specific study. Veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, college students with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and clinically depressed patients. And so that's one thing. In one of the books I wrote called Cycles of Life, I talk a lot about rose. Look at all the other medicinal effects, and you can share them as well. How about the vitamin C in rose hips? Another thing I share is how to make rosary beads out of rose petals. You can actually cook the rose petals and make them into beads. I give the recipe in the book. Punch holes in that and make a necklace out of it. Well, that's where that name rosary came from. So it's so extensive.
Oh, yeah. It's a really beautiful plant, isn't it? And I think what you're saying there about other aspects of health, of way to look after our health, such as mindfulness and cognitive therapy and you know, exercise and are really key to treating any disorder, because, you know, whether it's a drug or whether it's a plant, they're not necessarily curative. They can take us on the road and they can take us on a step to recovery. But what we want, and what herbal medicine often does, is take that holistic approach approach. When somebody comes to see a medical herbalist, they take a lot of factors into account and can give advice on you know, as a GPs do too. And things like mindfulness. And you have to be careful with mindfulness in some people who have severe depression, because it can be introspective, you know, you're getting inside your head. But for most people, it's a really effective way of calming the brain and calming our monkey brain down and just sitting in the moment. And I can't imagine a nicer place to do it than a bed of roses.
Right.
But the science of rose, yes, so rose is one of the lesser scientifically studied plant. But we put it in here because it does have some initial studies in human beings to show that the scents, or that the aromatics in rose, can increase our rest activity in our brain and induce feelings of contentment. And so it's been used, well, way back, and John Gerard, who was an English herbalist, said that the distilled water is good for strengthening the heart and refreshing the spirits, and likewise for all things that require a gentle cooling. And so rose has been used historically for the brain and for calming the brain. And so the essential oil has been shown to relieve anxiety and depression, as you were saying before. But it's also been looked at to relieve pain as well, and in migraine and menstruation and in back pain. So it's a really interesting plant, and it kind of is an example of a plant that does more than one thing. And so in lab studies, it's been clearly shown to have antidepressant activity, anticonvulsant activity, sleep-inducing activity, as well as pain-relieving activity, but also to be neuroprotective. And that's one of the key things that I kind of always advocate when I talk to people about plants. It's not just about treating symptoms. It's about stopping those symptoms in the first place and protecting ourselves with plants, using them as foods, using them as medicines, because they're so full of many antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, key chemicals that have been shown to protect not only our body but also our brain.
Right, and you do a beautiful job laying it out, because you talk about the beautiful history and folklore. You talk about, as we mentioned, mindfulness, and then you also inject the scientific studies, a little paragraph about it. And then if people want, let's say they are a researcher themselves, you actually have a list of the references in the back. So you can go ahead and read the studies.
That could have been a whole other book. I wanted to include all of them. And I have thought about actually doing a website for the whole lot of them, because, you know, as you know, they change daily, almost in the latest research, because that's the really key stuff that you want to see. And you want to be able to make synopsis of. And if you want to bridge that gap between orthodox and plant medicine, you know, herbal medicine, alternative medicine, the science, well, we feel here at the Physic Garden in Northumberland, in England, we feel that that is really key, that the science of how these plants work can really convince people and show people that actually when you look at a clinical study of a plant against another drug and you see that they're as efficacious and they don't have the side effects, that that's what can possibly bridge the gap and change people's minds.
Well, I think that in terms of just people, they're just going ahead and using herbs, but certainly in terms of getting this as part of what I love to say, standards of practice in conventional medicine. Because of what you just shared, Dr. Perry, and because of your work, I think you're going to push this forward to where standard of practice in medicine, both around the world and certainly here in the United States, should be based on not just supporting maximizing pharmaceutical sales, but should support the use of that which is most efficacious, most cost-effective, with the lowest incident of adverse effects per dose for most individuals. That should be the first and primary intervention, and then we can use more costly, both in terms of side effects and real price, pharmaceuticals. We can save them for later when necessary. Much better to use these first. That is my, you know, my input into that conversation, because I think it's becoming more and more apparent because of the great research that people like you are doing.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I do have to say, because the scientist in me says, well, you know, there are key singular drugs like morphine that in, you know, acute circumstances, I certainly wouldn't want to be without if I was in a position. But as you say, there are also, so for example, if I can talk about one plant in particular.
Well, you know what? Let me let you save that. Because we're going to take our mid-show break right here, and then when we come back, I'll say, okay, Dr. Perry, share that plant with us. So thank you so much for listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We will be right back with more.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the folklore, history, chemistry, and medicinal applications of the common kitchen herb, thyme.
The common culinary spice known botanically as Thymus vulgaris is only one member of a large genera which includes over 400 species and even more varieties. The Thymus genera is originally native to the Mediterranean region and is a perennial plant which grows wild in usually dry, sandy soil, green heaths, and grasslands. Thyme is a prolific, fragrant, creeping ground cover and often displays an attractive spray of flowering branchlets spanning the spectrum from white to violet.
There is considerable debate amongst historians as to the origin of the name thyme. Some believe it to be from the Greek thymen, meaning to fumigate or to burn a sacrifice, because it was used as a sweet-smelling incense and also to keep pests and venomous creatures away from the Greek home. Others believe it came from the Greek thumos, meaning courage or energy, perhaps because it has a reputation of being used by Greek warriors for courage and was bathed in and used as a beverage for invigoration. The Egyptians used an herb called tham, which we believe is Thymus vulgaris, to mummify their dead. The principal chemical constituents of thyme are the volatile oils consisting of phenol, thymol, and carvacrol. A 1977 article in the scientific journal Chemical Abstracts revealed that thymol's antimicrobial activity is 18 times more powerful than phenol. Phenol is a major antiseptic used in commercial germicidal cleaners like Lysol. Thymol is one of the most potent antimicrobial substances known and far surpasses even the strongest antibiotics. It has been illustrated in the Journal of Chemistry and in the Merck Index of Drugs and Chemicals to destroy parasites, worms, fungi, bacteria, mosquito larvae, and many viruses.
The pharmaceutical and cosmetic industry is privy to the important medicinal effects of oil of Thymus vulgaris. It is ubiquitously found in gargles, cough drops, vapor rubs, and many mouthwashes. Oil of thyme is to be used, albeit very sparingly because of its potency, as a gargle or mouthwash for sore throats and inflamed gums. Because the volatile oil is expelled via the lungs and kidneys, naturopathic physicians use it for upper respiratory infections and urinary tract infections. If you're in the midst of a cold and are lying in bed with too much thyme on your hands, try making a thyme tea made with just a few teaspoons of thyme to a cup of boiling water. It's an excellent diaphoretic because it causes the body to perspire profusely. Thyme also possesses an excellent carminative and antispasmodic effect, helping in poor digestion, flatulence, and intestinal gripe.
So, listeners, if you're feeling ill, thyme heals all wounds. Remember to reach for that thyme in a bottle the next time you open up the Natural Medicine Chest.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for those listeners who actually came to our Chinatown trip this week, which we just passed. And we have ongoing classes and workshops, both online and on ground. On ground in New York, Connecticut, and Florida. And online everywhere in the world, all the time. Please feel free to join us. And today, as our guest here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, is Dr. Nicolette Perry. She specializes in pharmacognosy, which is the study of medicine produced from plants. And she has published extensively and talks about medicinal plants for the brain. She is the director of the Dilston Physic Garden and co-author, along with her mother, very impressive, of Your Brain on Plants. Improve the way you think and feel with safe and proven medicinal plants and herbs. The book is available both in hard copy, which is absolutely beautiful, and I believe it's also available in an ebook. So welcome back, Dr. Perry, to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you.
Now, you were going to share with us something having to do with, you know, there are times and places and different plants. So why don't you go ahead and pick up where you were sharing before?
Oh, yeah, right. Great. So I was going to share the story of St. John's Wort, of St. John's Wort. I think you say St. John's Wort, don't you, over there?
We say wort.
Oh, you say wort. Okay. Because this is, if you can bear with me, it's got a lovely story. And actually, at the Physic Garden at Dilston, we have a big St. John's Wort sculpture. So we have a big snake-like demon that's rising out of some yellow flowers. And he's well over human height tall. And we have things like that to capture the imagination of the school children and the public, to try to connect with them about plants and make them, you know, remember what these plants do. So we have the demon because St. John's Wort was used historically to drive away the demon. And as you know, one explanation for the blues was that we were possessed by a demon, possessed by a snake, and we wanted to shake it off. So it's a really lovely story to talk about. And the name, actually, Hypericum, comes from the word hyper being above and econ being an unwanted image. So the Latin name, Hypericum, Hypericum perforatum, you know, it alludes to actually what it's used for, and it's been used for hundreds of years. So St. John's Wort historically is a key antidepressant. It's also a key wound healer and anti-inflammatory, and I'll make that connection perhaps as well. But as far as treating depression is concerned, and what we suggest at the beginning of each chapter in the book, so each chapter is dedicated to a different area, you know, whether it's sleep, whether it's anxiety, but St. John's Wort in depression and lifting mood. And we don't always want to treat depression. We sometimes just want to lift our mood. But do we fully understand what goes on in our bodies? And does science, does medicine, in the brain, body, emotion axis? And, are we convinced that, our orthodox, serotonin reuptake inhibitors are better than placebo? And are we more than that, though? Are we happy with the side effects, which include nausea, which include dizziness, which include sexual dysfunctions, and do we find these acceptable? St. John's Wort's interesting because of its use as a key anti-inflammatory, and information has been more recently linked to depression and other disorders of the brain. So, you know, an anti-inflammatory plant can do us wonders, not just with the body, but also with the brain. So St. John's Wort, well, now the reason why I'm talking about it is because before we were talking about comparing a plant to an orthodox drug that's used. Now, St. John's Wort, and it's one of the plants that's used in parts of Europe, to treat depression alongside orthodox drugs. So say, for example, you went to see your doctor. I've been feeling low, you know, for the last 3 months. What have you got? And of course, as we've talked about, there's lots of ways of addressing the problem, addressing the issue. But in parts of Europe, your doctor would suggest, well, okay, we've got a benzodiazepine here. We've got a serotonin reuptake inhibitor here. Or you can try St. John's Wort. And that's just something that would not happen in the UK at the moment. And this is because St. John's Wort was one of the first plants to be looked at, you know, properly by science. And by properly, I mean, the meta-analysis, the statistical analysis of all of the clinical trials that had been done so far. So, and it's been shown to be as effective as serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So as effective as an antidepressant as orthodox medication. So for example, when St. John's wort extract was looked at against Prozac or fluoxetine, it was found, which is a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, so it was found to be as effective but with fewer side effects. And it was also found to be anti-anxiety as well. So this is for mild to moderate depression. It's really key that we have these studies, and I would really like to see more of them. And it's something that I'm actually working on the moment, is publishing a paper on these comparisons for all of the plants for the brain. But St. John's wort has been shown in major depression also against fluoxetine for 12 weeks in 39 patients to be as effective in decreasing the symptoms of major depression, which is a key finding. So St. John's wort is one of the few plants to be in the British Medical Journal, which, you know, over here is, you know, one of the high esteemed journals. And it was one of the publications that actually perhaps started the concept in medics of, oh, well, perhaps plants might have effects. It's also been tested against tricyclic antidepressants. So it's been tested against imipramine, and it's been shown to be as effective again, but with significantly better tolerability. And as you said before, you know, it's safety first when it comes to medicine, you know. So if it has better tolerability and fewer side effects, well, you know, it should be, as you say, the first port of call. It's also been tested against another tricyclic antidepressant, amitriptyline, and it's been shown to have superior tolerability for mild to moderate depression.
That is so true. St. John's wort is amazing. And more about it, when we talk about Hypericum perforatum, it's interesting that when we hold up those little leaves, because I also love wildcrafting in the field, right, all the way from there to the science, but you actually can see this little perforation, little tiny pinholes in those leaves. And I'm wondering if you think that had to do with the species name perforatum.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it must do, because it's really cool to do that. I agree. You know, there's nothing like getting to know your plant, and it's all about getting to know your plant, isn't it? Because you want to make sure you've got the right species and the one that's going to be most effective. So holding up your St. John's wort, because you can get trees, can't you, of St. John's wort? And actually, there's a visit garden growing in Kenya it started to grow because of our foundation course here, and the lady went back and just started to grow a visit garden, and they've got a St. John's wort over there, but it's a tree. And so we were trying to look at those species and see whether it had the same efficacy for depression. But the little holes are not actually holes, they're actually filled with the fluid and the oil. And actually, if you smell St. John's wort essential oil, it is really lovely smell. It's something that I often give to people. When I give talks to the public, I often give them a smell and the aroma of the plant before I start talking about it and see if they can guess what it is. But it's got a really kind of musty, interesting smell. And you wouldn't have guessed that from the little plant that grows, the little weed.
Yeah, and what about the fact that the flowers are yellow? And of course, there's Druid stories about it being solidified sunshine, which is really interesting since it seems so effective, particularly in SAD, seasonal affective disorder. But also the oil is red, not yellow.
Yeah, I know. And if you crush the leaves, it's red. And that is really interesting, isn't it? It's really interesting. Maybe that's the chasing away the demon with the yellow. But, you know, you can get into the doctrine of signatures and all those kind of really interesting philosophies that I think, you know, some of them are really, really fascinating. But and how they evolved and how they appeared, who knows? Because there are theories that we evolved alongside plants, and that, you know, we cultivated them and the plants wanted us to cultivate them, therefore they did us some good. I mean, there are all sorts of theories. Who knows exactly?
Another recipe that you share in your book in terms of St. John's wort, and don't forget, St. John got his head cut off, right, in terms of popping off the flower head and then red fluid comes out. So yet another interesting story relating to that plant.
I didn't know that one.
Well, Yeah, that's one that I have actually in my book, because St. John's Wort, you know, it was, and it also flowers right around June 24th,
yeah,
right near St. John's Day. So there's endless stories, but then your work takes it further. You are honoring the ancient information, but taking it forward into modern times through the chemical analysis. And I think that's absolutely the best path. And then you have such beautiful things in your book, Your Brain on Plants, like you call this Happy Face Cream, which is making your own all-natural cream by sort of blending St. John's Wort into a cream base. And that's just fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it's great because, you know, it's also a good skin healer. So, and it's good for the skin as well. So you're getting two things in one there. You're getting happiness and you're getting nice skin in a jar. But it's interesting. It's about the ways to take your medicine. And it's where you get people who are kind of on the other side of the fence might sort of scoff. I don't know whether that's an American term, but it's definitely an old English term. So might scoff at, well, what's happy face cream or what's banana bread? You know, because bananas, eating one banana has been shown to be as effective as having one Prozac, which is interesting.
You're kidding. Wait. I haven't heard that one. Can you share more about that?
Well, this is so there is a clinical psychiatrist who we worked with, and she advocates that, but also a couple of little squares of dark chocolate as well as being effective as Prozac. So it's because these chemicals, and I was talking about the face cream and ways of taking your medicine, and as you know, many can be foodstuffs, and it's just, eating a banana is the same as taking a tablet. You're going to get some of the effective chemicals. It's the dose that's important. So when you're wanting to treat a condition, you know, that's when we get into capsules or tinctures and different forms. But as preventative medicines, you know, a happy face cream, an uplifting face cream, it's certainly going to, those chemicals are going to get through your skin and into your brain. And these have been shown, essential oils have been shown to get straight into the skin. In about 20 minutes, you'll see the peak in their chemical constituents in the blood.
That's really interesting. You even have a bergamot banana bread recipe in your book. So it's so integrating recipes and home projects that people can do with the top-level science. Really, really a unique perspective. Let's talk about saffron, because I think saffron, I just did a lecture, in fact, on brain herbs, and the amount of science recently on saffron was very astounding to me. And plus, it seems to be in that it has effects really in a not a very high amount. I believe something like 30 milligrams was studied at some point. So what do you think of saffron?
Yeah, saffron's an interesting one. I'm always a bit reluctant to talk about it because I often talk to people about growing your own medicines and, you know, because that is key. You know, you want to see a medical herbalist. You want to make sure you're getting treated with the right plants and you're using the right plants for you. But eventually, you know, you want to be able to grow your plant medicines and look after yourself. And saffron, well, I just fear that most people won't have the fields to grow enough saffron, to get the clinical effect from what they can grow. But as you say, it's a really, really interesting plant that is one of the ones that's been studied by RCTs, by randomized controlled trials, and has even had a meta-analysis of six of those randomized controlled trials. So it's the lovely spice, and you know, it's used around the world, isn't it? So is it a mellow yellow? Because it's been used to treat mild to major depression, and it's been found in the meta-analysis to be comparable to the conventional medications. So for example, in major depression, in a randomized controlled trial in 66 patients in Iran, saffron extract, and as you say, it was 30 mg per day. Yeah, so 30 mg, which actually is low for a plant, because often you're taking more like 1,000 mg, aren't you? Against citalopram, which was 40 mg per day, and it's been shown to be as effective for anxiety and reducing depression. So anxiety and depression reduction. So, It's also been looked at in a clinical study. So saffron has been taken alongside fluoxetine, Prozac again, for depression, and it's been shown to have the same antidepressant efficacy compared to fluoxetine. But what's key in another study comparing it to fluoxetine, to Prozac, and to Prozac-induced sexual dysfunction, saffron actually significantly improved the induced sexual dysfunction of Prozac. So that is really key. You know, you can take your antidepressant, but you don't need to have the side effects. So there are other studies on saffron, but I think that, you know, it's from Spain, and it's been used in the Mediterranean and in Greece for many years, and it's only now that we're actually really seeing what it can do, and it has other effects too. But what's key is its lab, and for me, is seeing actually, you know, okay, that's a clinical trial, but it's seeing the backup data from the lab. So it's been shown to affect our mood-boosting serotonin signal, our dopamine, so our well-being signal as well, but also to affect our memory signal, which is acetylcholine, which is the main signal to do with keeping our memory and boosting attention and memory. And I could talk about that one because I could talk about SAGE and what
okay,
SAGE
so,
can do. To
so hold that thought 1 second because we're going to take our next break so that PRN, our wonderful station here, PRN.FM, can identify itself and tell you about more wonderful shows we have and also speak about how you can donate to the station. So we will be right back with more, and hold that thought, Dr. Perry, because we'll come right back to it when we're done. You will have time to share it. We're speaking with Dr. Nicolette Perry, PhD, and author, co-author of Your Brain on Plants. Improve the way you think and feel with safe and proven medicinal plants and herbs. We'll be right back with more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
I'm Gary Knoll, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to PRN.FM, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, will give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and the industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
And And thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you can always find us at naturalnurse.com. You can find lists of our radio shows, like here on PRN. You can listen to them as well. And, of course, you can find out more about our books. We have many books. There are articles that are searchable on any topic. We have people from all over the world who have been on our radio show. So we'd love you to join us. Also, we have classes on how to become a registered herbalist, gets you all the way through to become a registered herbalist, or you can just take courses on how to use herbal medicine safely and effectively for yourself and your family. So all kinds of ways to interact with us and study with us, as well as ongoing CE unit accredited classes. Check out the website naturalnurse.com on calendar for a list of upcoming classes, or look at our consults and education areas to see about putting together a private class for anything you would like to learn. So today, we're so happy to have as our guest Dr. Nicolette Perry, who specializes in pharmacognosy, and we're talking about her beautiful book, which is wonderful for lay people, consumers, and advanced herbalists, as well as physicians, and anyone who would like to learn about plants. And the name of the book, particularly, is Your Brain on Plants. Improve the way you think and feel with safe and proven medicinal plants and herbs. So welcome back, Dr. Perry.
Thank you.
So please continue to share what we had to go to our break and cut you off for.
Okay. Brilliant. So I was heading towards the sage garden at the Physic Garden. So, I wanted to talk a bit about sage because, thank you. So the Physic Garden at Dilston, in Northumberland in England actually, began because of this, I would say humble herb, but I think it's a really big herb. And I think it's got a lot to say. So salvia and on, though there are, you know, 700 to 900 different species, and I don't know how many, I'm afraid, exactly. This is European sage that I'm talking about. So it's the foodstuff plant. So this is getting back to food is thy medicine. And I think it's really key that we start integrating plants into our lives a lot more. And why we've forgotten how to use them and when to use them and to actually eat them a lot more, I don't know. But we seem to have, over the past 200 years, stopped using them as medicine. So sage was written about in the 17th century by an English herbalist called Culpeper. And he said that it is of excellent use to help the memory, warming and quickening the senses. Now, it was that quote and a few other ones which stimulated the Physic Garden, because Elaine was a bit disillusioned by what was available to treat Alzheimer's disease. There were no drugs that were effectively treating it, and of course these drugs came with many side effects. So she decided to look. After a moment of enlightenment at a conference on consciousness down in Mexico, she decided to look at the old English herbalists and discovered that sage had been used in the past to treat disorders of the brain and to treat memory. So with quotes like that and other quotes which allude to its potential as a cure oil, as a sort of tonic plant. He that will live for aye must eat sage in May. And I love that quote particularly because in May, sage is highest in its constituent cineol, also known as eucalyptol. And it's one of the key chemicals that actually increases our brain signal, acetylcholine. And when you increase this brain signal, you're increasing your attention and memory. It decreases naturally as we age, acetylcholine does. And it also is a significant aspect of Alzheimer's disease, the cholinergic system. So targeting that little brain signal is something that we can really do with our food stuff. Another quote, why should a man die while he has sage growing in his garden? That's a pretty bold statement. So sage is one of the plants that's in our next clinical trial that we're running here at the Physic Garden. And we're running that and collaborating with Kew Gardens in London as well. And we're testing four plants, one of them is sage, another is rosemary, which also contains cineol, and another is nigella, and another is lemon balm. So we're testing these four plants in a tincture form, and we're using a tincture form because probably the same with you. Medical herbalists here believe that tincture form is more bioavailable, and there's a little bit of science that goes alongside that. So we're testing that. Our previous trial showed that this combination improved word recall in the under 63s by over 50%. So we're wanting to up the dose a bit and also to see if we can get that effect in the over 63s, so in the older population. The thing about sage is that when I studied this little one plant, I studied one species of Spanish sage. So that's a slightly thinner leaf, slightly silvery, looks a bit more like lavender. It's called Salvia lavandulifolia. And I studied that for 3 years and in relation to Alzheimer's disease. And we found that not only did it increase acetylcholine, our brain signal for memory and attention, but it also was antioxidant, anti-inflammatory and estrogenic. And the fact that it's estrogenic is interesting because people on HRT, women on HRT, have been shown to have a lesser incidence of developing Alzheimer's. So those are kind of key actions. Antioxidants and anti-inflammatory are key for protecting our brain cells. But it also has effects for mood and it can calm mood as well, which, as you know, as a symptom of Alzheimer's disease, agitation is really something that needs to be addressed, and sedatives can have many side effects that go alongside them. So we're testing it ourselves in a clinical trial because it has already been tested in controlled trials, to do with the research that we kicked off, well, way back now, feels like a long time ago, I think it was 20 years ago. So it's been shown to enhance memory and alertness in the healthy, in the young and the old, but also to counter the cognitive impairment and improve those behavioural measures in Alzheimer's as well. So so one more thing about it. It also has been shown to lower cholesterol and to improve an oxidation profile clinically. And these are both relevant to cognitive function. So yeah, I think we should all be eating sage. and you can.
Well, is just eating it good enough?
Well, I always say that I think eating it is a great prophylactic, and you know, eating all these plants, all the edible safe plants, and which are full of antibiotics, antivirals, you know, anti-inflammatories, estrogenics, are great protective agents. But when you want to treat a condition, and we always say here, definitely, if you want to treat a condition or you're on taking medication, see a medical herbalist first, because there are contraindications with plants, but and you want to make sure you're getting the right medicine for you, but it's reaching the medicinal dose. So to eat it, you would need to have 30 grams daily. Now, that is possible in tea form, but that's where tinctures come in and capsules come in, and tinctures especially. Tinctures for me are really interesting way to take a medicine, because you can combine so many different plants within one tincture and you can get a medicinal dose. So you're not, for example, taking several different tablets. So I find that a really interesting medicine that medical herbalists use.
Yes, so much so. So each of your plants, oh my goodness, we are out of time, Dr. Nicholas. Tell people where they might find the book and find you before we sign off for today.
Thank you. So, the Dilson Physic Garden is, you can find that at dilsonphysicgarden.com, and we are based in Northumberland, and we've got about 700 different plants, and a big sage garden. So it's a great place to visit, and the north of England is great too, with lots to see, like the Roman walls. So if anyone's ever swinging this way, please do drop in. But botanical, and you can find the book with you, and you can find it online as well.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Again, the name of the author and our guest today is Nicolette Perry, PhD. The name of her book is Your Brain on Plants. And this is Dr. Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, along with my co-host, Dr. Eugene Samperone. You can always visit us at naturalnurse.com. And until next time, we would like to hope that you stay healthy.